Welcome to A Tale of Two Scribes. I'm your host, Eric P. Bishop. This is a podcast where interesting people come and tell about the stories they've crafted. As for myself, I'm an author. I've created novels, short stories, novellas, and even poetry. If you'd like to find out more about what I've done, please go to my website, ericpbishop.com. Thanks, and enjoy the journey. Welcome back to another episode of A Tale of Two Scribes. The scribe I bring to you tonight is a doctor scribe, actually. Dr. Jason Piccolo is with us tonight. Hello, Jason.
Hey, what's going on, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing very well. So obviously, we've known each other for a little while. I've been fortunate to actually be on your podcast, which is The Protectors, which I've been very honored to be on several times and doing even some co-hosting with you over the years. But I wanted to bring you on this podcast, my podcast in particular, to talk about the process of creativity and particularly writing. As some people will know from seeing some of the episodes, I'm bringing on all different kinds of people. So when I think of a scribe, I think of a writer. And normally my brain obviously goes to fiction or writing novels. And that's like such a small piece of the pie for people that write. Because yourself, which we're going to dive into, you've written about your experiences working on the border, and, you know, you've written for your doctoral thesis. So, you know, there's so many ways people write. And like I've told people, they'll say, oh, I'm not a writer. It's like, have you ever journaled? I'm like, well, yeah, I used to journal. It's like, well, you've written then. You might not be a published writer, but you've written. And man, once you start down that journey, if you enjoy the process, especially, you don't know where it will take you.
You never know. You never, ever know. And I like how, you know, I forgot all about my dissertation because I forgot when I got my master's, I had to write a master's graduate project too. And that was forensic science. So it had to be along those lines of
data
and all the other good stuff. But, you know, I love writing. I love writing nonfiction, but I'm kind of delving into the fiction realm.
Yeah.
And absolutely. We'll get more into that later on in a year, but mostly everything I've written over the past 4 or 5 years has been 99% of it has been nonfiction.
Right.
And, you know, I wrote my own books about like the border and about the DC bureaucracy and work in DC for Homeland Security and other agencies. Mm-hmm. But I've actually written a ton of magazine articles as well. I keep forgetting about that.
And yeah.
A lot of it has to do with interviewing people. And that's the great thing about podcasts is it gives you opportunity to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And talking and writing kind of go, you have to kind of go hand in hand.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wrote actually today because I wrote some notes of what I was going to talk about with you. What are some of the questions I want to ask? What's your back? I've got my list here. So let's see. You can correct me or you can expand upon this universe. You've spent almost 30 years in service to your country, whether it be in the Army, which you were a captain.
Yeah, it was. I was enlisted in the 90s, and then later on, I got out as a captain in 06. So I was reserve, active duty,
gotcha.
Peacetime and wartime. So it was an interesting military experience.
Yeah. And then straight from Army, is that when you went into the Border Patrol?
No, so I went in the Army, and then I got out. I went to college.
Okay.
And then when I got out of college, I went to the Border Patrol, and I did the Border Patrol for 2.5 years, and then I became a special agent.
Gotcha.
With the former U.S. Customs, which eventually becomes HSI. Mm-hmm. Then I went to work for a bunch of different agencies over the years, DOD, and then I went to work back for ICE again. And then my last career point was with actually Environmental Protection Agency,
mm-hmm.
Investigations Division. So that's where I worked more headquarters type stuff, senior advisor, associate special agent stuff. So yeah, it's been an interesting career. So I did 23 years as a Fed.
Okay.
And probably about half here and there, and then about half in D.C., beautiful D.C. So right in the...
In the Beltway.
Right in the Beltway, the bureaucracy, the headquarters elements. Yeah, so interesting.
Yeah, no, that's... And then besides that, obviously, we touched on very briefly a few minutes ago, podcast host of
the... Oh, yeah, podcasting since 2019. I think I'm on almost 500 episodes now.
Wow.
And, you know, I've tried to, over the years, I've tried to delve into a whole bunch of different things. Mm-hmm. I tried, but I have.
You have.
Like I teach community college, teach university. And then I write for a lot of different periodicals. I even wrote for AARP for their online stuff.
We're not saying how old you are or anything. I mean,
hey, you know what? 51, you know, but it's like still AARP was fun. You know, I do like the Veterans Corner types of articles.
Right.
And then, you know, Skill Set Magazine, and I've written some a bunch of op-eds, some for Newsweek and a bunch of other things.
Good thing with AARP is probably there's a good chance the words you write are going to be read. Because people that, you know, people that are that age group at this point are still, they grew up in a time where, you know, we did as well, where
mm-hmm.
had magazines. I delivered a newspaper from when I was 10 years old until 16. So it's 6 years. My kids get sick of hearing about it when they go, oh, they complain. And I'm like, yeah, I was up at 6, 5:30, between 5:30 and 7, because Sundays you got to sleep in a little bit. They were harder days because you had big, thick paper, you know, phone book papers to deliver and 100 plus of them. I can't remember.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm used to, but I tell my kids, yeah, because my son said something the other day about, oh, I get to my sleep-in day. And I was like, sleep-in day? Man, I don't think I had one of those for 6 years.
I know. My highlight of my writing, though, was getting published in an actual magazine. So the last episode, not the last episode, but the last issue of Ballistic Magazine, which has Skill Set inside of it, was, you know, my article. So they went completely digital after that. I don't know, maybe it was because of me. No, but it was nice actually, you know, write a magazine article. Because, you know, you and I are both like, oh, magazine, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. But like, kids nowadays are like, oh, everything's digital.
Yeah, well, I mean, for whatever reason, I guess it's because in my grocery store, I got my local Ingles, which if I don't have my kids, I don't like shop. When I have them, I'll do a big shopping trip with them normally. What do you want while you're here for the week or for the weekend or whatever? But by myself, I mean, I'll go out tonight. After we get done, I'll go to the gym, work out, and I'll swing through the grocery store and get something for dinner, and they'll cook late, whatever. So the grocery store people probably think I'm a nuts job because I'm in there all the time. But when you walk in that door, the first aisle you go straight down through is to how you get to the meat selection. Yeah. And since I'm doing carnivore now, I spend a lot of time in the meat section buying meats for the next day or whatever. But when you cut down that aisle, you walk right by the periodicals. And there is a massive aisle still. And maybe there is up in Kroger or Wegmans up where you are. But there's still a big aisle of magazines. And I kind of sometimes walk by and I'll kind of glance and I'll be like, man, they still print magazines? That many of them? Because I myself could not tell you the last time I bought a magazine. I mean, I think I bought my kids a Harry Potter commemorative one a few years ago or whatever, you know, for 12.
Yeah, everything's digital. And, you know, I'm glad we're talking about writing is because, like, for instance, me, if I'm writing a lot of nonfiction, I like to write all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started my own Substack. And if people don't understand what a Substack is, it's almost like your own little online magazine.
Yeah.
So a Substack is
like a blog in a way too. I mean,
yeah. It's just like a blog.
Thought you can put stuff out there.
It is. You don't have to build a website. That's the cool thing about it. It's already pre-built.
Right.
So I go in there and I write an article. I like to write a lot about policing and like law enforcement, like leadership, a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives me an outlet, you know, so you could knock out 600, 800, 900 words and boom, you could publish it that same night.
Right.
And you can get it out to an audience. And eventually, after I get to a certain point, I could be like, hey, look, you know, you want to support the Substack? It's $5 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So you could sustain it. You could actually start writing. But the thing is, it gives you an opportunity to write. A lot of people, like you were saying before, like you can get a journal, you can write a journal. But if you want to be creative for an audience,
mm-hmm.
write everywhere you can. Like yeah. I used to always write op-eds. Now I like to write more for, you know, factual type stuff, because my opinion is my opinion, but I like to speak to facts. So yeah. A lot of times I like to reach out to different periodicals and say, hey, you know what? You're interested in this article. So mm-hmm. I started writing for Police One, which is a huge online, almost like a digital repository for policing. And geez, I don't know how many million subscribers they have, but it's like, it's nice just to get out there
mm-hmm.
and just to write. And it's not always about the money, because we know like publishing and writing it takes a while. You have to build. You have to keep building until you eventually start making a dime.
They pay you money? Hold on.
Eventually they will. For
so many years. Wait, what?
Yeah, you would hope so. Yeah, and like, you know, yeah, you would hope. Like, and that's cool things. Like AARP actually pays pretty good. But, you know, a lot of times you just have to write to write.
Yeah.
It's like a craft.
Mm,
and I was like, if you're an athlete, you have to work out, you have to practice, and you have to keep doing it. Like I like doing photography now. It's kind of like my another creativity outlet for me. Mm-hmm. So I had to practice. I have to practice for free. That means going out and photographing people for free, which is fine. I love it. But that's the thing, is you have to do things and you have to keep doing it, and it, you're not going to see like feedback right away. The best feedback you can get is praise when it comes to freedom. I mean, like, when you're, I shouldn't say freedom, I should say free. So it's nice if someone like relates to the article or something, or they learn something, you know, whether it's like behind the lens of a camera, when you're taking a picture of someone, they see themselves at a different light. And they're like, oh, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
It's better than just like taking a picture with a, with an iPhone selfie. And the same thing when you write an article and people are like, they relate to it. They go, yeah, you know what? I thought about that. And this is somehow we could fix this.
Well, in a way, you know, what, now that you say that, that kind of points me back to you being a college professor, because especially when you're writing those type of articles for a police, you know, magazine or whatever, you're not just, it's not an opinion piece. You're actually teaching people something, you know, because you've got this, really this wealth of experience that has happened over all these years of working in these various agencies, working closely with the border. You know, a heck of a lot more than what's, you know, going on than the average uninformed American or average Americans just watching Fox or CNN or does NBC, do the big networks still do nightly news? I think they do. I think they do.
I don't even know anymore.
I don't know either. But you're able to then take that knowledge base of what you've learned and you're able to inform people, which, you know, that's a powerful thing, because you don't know if something you write is going to resonate or it's going to maybe start an interest in with someone that they then will start either looking into it, or maybe they, like with your writing, maybe they'll start writing themselves because that article touches them and they're like, man, I have a knowledge of this skill set or this experience that I could teach others.
Like, my dream job was being an investigative journalist. Like, I would love to uncover things and have the world know what's going on and do it in a non-political way. Like, here's the facts. You take the facts and you develop your own thoughts, opinions. It help you build what you want in your knowledge base, and not because, like, quote unquote, journalism nowadays is always left, far, far left, far, far right. And it's all about fire.
Right.
And, you know, I took an advertising class in either community college or senior year in high school. I don't even remember. It's been so long, but I always remember this is like fear sells. Fear sells so much. And that's what people want. They want it. It's echo chambers, but they want to build on it. I feel like, oh my gosh, he's so true. And that's the one thing we see about, like, you know, people with millions of followers or hundreds of thousands of followers or 50,000 followers is if they're in a certain way and a certain fire, they gain followers, echo chamber followers.
Yeah.
But there's 320 million people in the country.
Right.
Plus. And, you know, to me, it's like I want to reach the farthest audience I can with the facts that I know. Mm-hmm. So when I first retired, I went to work for a news, quote unquote, I'm going to use that quote unquote a lot, but quote unquote news agency. And I was hired to be an investigative journalist. And as they sold me the job, they were like, look, you are going to be like AP or Reuters. Where your stuff goes, it's going to go right to the mainstream. It's going to go all over and people can use your articles. It wasn't quite like that. I wanted to do investigative pieces. I didn't want to do like hit pieces, and I didn't want to do pieces where it's just like skew the audience to one point or the other. I wanted to be like, this is what's going on at the border. This is what's going on overseas. This is what's going on here. You make your opinion based on these facts. And it just, you know, nowadays it's tough to find an investigative journalist job.
Yeah.
Hence starting your own Substack. And that's why a lot of people are doing the Substacks. And that's why I'm going to continue to do the Substacks, because now I can shine a light on different forms of policing and different law enforcement type stuff.
Well, the platform it gives you is pretty remarkable.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, we're old enough to know what a world is like without the internet, or with such a rudimentary, you know, we were teenagers, the internet was there, but, you know, AOL and all, the Yahoo search engine, you know, it's like when you see these little things, little memes or something pop up on the internet now, and they have the sound of a modem going on and go, kids nowadays.
Oh my gosh.
No idea what this is. It's like, no, I remember how many times it would take to connect sometimes, and the watching a picture download and it's going.
And you know, the first information age was outside of when the internet first started going nuts, was you would get a disc for the encyclopedia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you're like, oh, wow, Shinkarta or whatever it was called. And you're like, I got the encyclopedia.
Encyclopedia Britannica disc, man.
And then, like, you know, trying to decipher, like, relevant information on it on the internet as well now. So it's like, it's tough finding true facts and right away with the search engines. And that's why I like a lot of times that's why you and I love podcasts, and that's why a lot of really, really like talking to people is because I want to get viewpoints from people who have that ground truth. And that's one of the things about talking to a lot of authors we do and a lot of the people we do is they have the ground truth that the topics we want to talk about. And that's one thing about people, if you're getting into the writing thing, is if you're getting into that fiction world, is to talk to subject matter experts or talk to people who have a really good grounding in it. You know, like when you're writing a book about the Secret Service, you talk to someone who has some relevant background in that. You're talking about, you know, a tour security or something like that, or being around bands, you got to talk to John. You know,
I'm
you
gonna
talk to different people.
grab two books that are right literally by my leg here. And so people, so I'll segue that into for writing, there's two resources for fiction. Absolutely 100% what you're talking about is you want to write about something in the FBI world or something that you don't have any interest in, try to find someone from that world. To get started, Stephen King's On Writing is almost universally every writer out there is going to tell you you need to read this book for fiction, and even for nonfiction, really. And then the other one, David Murrell's The Successful Novelist.
Yeah, I
So
got that
those
one.
two, and I've been fortunate, I've met Stephen, I've fortunate to meet David several times, interviewed him a couple of years ago back, even on a podcast, and super just the other thing, and I know you've experienced this as well, is what you'll find with writers that you'll encounter is they're very generous individuals.
Very.
So they are going to give you a knowledge base. They might not be able to give you a lot of time, depending on how many people are kind of coming at them with questions or what's going on with their writing. But it's amazing that you can actually get in contact with some pretty well-to-do authors that will actually give you positive reinforcement, positive advice. Or sometimes it's not positive. Sometimes it's, you know, when if you start having conversations about the publishing industry and how it works, and what money you might make on it, the conversation might not be positive.
Well, they or they might be like real.
Yeah, it's
Hey,
completely
they'll
real.
read some of your stuff and be like, "Hey, look, you know, you gotta rewrite this. It's
Absolutely.
the people really want to hear that." You know,
Absolutely.
because you know, the end of the day is if you want to be published and you want to make a living out of it, in order to make a living, you have to make money, or it's just a hobby. And there's nothing wrong with having a hobby of writing, or use it as something else too. You know, use it as kind of like a platform to do something else. You know, one of the reasons I do the podcasting is to meet good people and to talk to people and get a different information base. It's the same thing with writing. I want to write in order to keep my information flowing. I want my brain to keep pumping. And, you know, I want to be able to, like, you know, just keep talking.
Well, one of the things too, I want to circle back real quick. You mentioned earlier that, you know, writing an article and, you know, maybe pushing out 500 to 900 words, for people that are getting interested in writing or just starting the process and wondering, man, how can I ever finish a novel? Well, just take the numbers Jason just said. 900 words is pretty close to 1,000. If you could write 1,000 words a day, which is not for people that are experienced, is not a crazy amount of words to put out. It's not a full day. You can do it in the evenings after everyone goes to sleep or in the morning. 1,000 words a day, if you could be faithful and religious about it, will get you a rough draft of a novel in 3 months. 3 months. Or
Three
if you
months.
can only do 500 words a day, that's 6 months. And 500 words is pretty, you know, you could write 500 words, you know, in 30, 45
Oh,
minutes,
yeah.
without too much of a struggle, even if you're not entirely experienced in the process. So if you take that and say, man, just take a bite of 500 words and commit to do it for a while, man, before you know it, after several months, you're pretty headlong into a full novel.
Well, the other thing is use the resources you have.
Yeah.
You know, write. I always that my mantra has always been write, edit later. Just write it. And then you run it through Grammarly or whatever to get rid of some of like the basic mistakes. But just keep writing. Keep writing and don't worry about that editing portion of it. It doesn't have to be pretty. You know, you could knock out 1,000 words a day. Don't worry. But if you were knocking out 500 words and then you're editing it, 500 editing it, you're going to get bogged down.
100%. Well, and you can't fix anything you haven't put down on paper. So until you write it, you can't fix it. So you could spend a month agonizing over a paragraph or over a page and keep making it perfect. And at the end of the day, yeah, you're never going to finish that novel. So, and there's so many ways to do it. I know people that are very accomplished that they write a chapter, and the next day when they start writing, and it's normally for most of them their full-time job, honestly, but the first thing they do is go back and edit what they wrote the day before. It gets them in the mindset, and then they write the next chapter. So every day they're touching the previous day's chapter and writing the new chapter. But that's hard to do if you've got a full-time job and you've got family and you've got commitments. I know, and people have heard me say it on other podcasts and stuff, my first novel, when I was writing it back in 2014, I started after everybody in the house went to sleep. That was my, and I'm a night hawk, so that worked for me. My brain worked. Other people get up at 5, 6 a.m. and write. So I would just write from 10 o'clock until extremely late because I didn't know what I was doing. And that's not a good way to do it. You need to, so then by book two, I disciplined myself. So I started writing at 10 o'clock again, but I cut it off at midnight. I was done. No questions asked. I don't care if I was in the middle of a paragraph. I finished the sentence and stopped. And then I transitioned my brain to go to sleep. So I normally watch Seinfeld, or at one point I started watching Breaking Bad, which was a bad way to
Oh,
transition
geez.
my
Good
brain.
luck trying to go to sleep after watching
Exactly. Then my dreams are really interesting then.
that, man.
But I started a good side business with a bus I bought and put in the
Oh,
back.
there you go. Yeah.
Kidding, kidding, kidding. So no, it's, but you have to find your process. But yeah, if you can stick with it, and if you can actually put something aside to focus on a writing, whether it's fiction, nonfiction. I mean, I tell people even like poetry. I write poetry too. Nothing I want to be out in the world, but that is a form of writing, and that normally gets my brain, kind of moving around the line of, because make myself rhyme stuff makes myself really start thinking. Well, if I start thinking, I start getting creative. Start getting creative, I normally kill someone in a book. Maybe
Well,
Jake.
that's the word
Who
right there
knows?
is creative. Having a creative outlet. Like everything in my life up until about 40s was always about building a resume. Oh, I've got to build this resume. That's why I have all these like education and all this other stuff. I have like so many certificates. It's like, why? And now, like, if you look at my creative outlet starting around 42, 43, it started changing. It started getting into like, writing. My first blog, even before I started doing social media, I used to drink. And I had a blog called The Beer in a Beltway. So I'd go around to different breweries and I would check the beer out. I'd write a blog about it. And it just being creative, finding something that's not having to do with law enforcement and anything that had to do anything with my job. And now it's like it got me out there. So like the photography thing and nature and seeing things. I write a lot about law enforcement now because it excites me and it has nothing to do with a job. Now it's about, hey, you know what? I love teaching. I love knowledge. I love learning. So why don't I keep learning about that? And that's one of the everything I'm doing is kind of on that brand too, because I do the court TV thing. I think I'm on like 100 episodes of Court TV I've been doing. So I've been doing like almost every week for a while since September 2020. I go on there, I do law enforcement analysis. So it keeps me relevant.
Is there any writing that's tied to that? Do you have to do some, or
You just have
is
to do research. But the thing
research?
is, you have to kind of be on. You have to be able to critically think. And that's the thing about writing nonfiction and fiction, is you have to be able to really think critical. Like, I really want to write a crime thriller, like true crime-ish type thriller, because that's the kind of stuff I like. I've been beating around the fiction thing for a while, and I'm like, there are so many military thrillers out there, and military in my life is a certain aspect of it. I was never an operator. I was an infantry officer, but I wasn't like that Delta guy. But one thing I have been in is law enforcement. And why don't I write along the lines of something that's kind of relevant, something I know. And that's what I
Absolutely.
love about, like, I love to do like a serial killer thriller type thing. And I kind of, that's what I'm kicking on right now. On top of writing, I want to write at least another two nonfiction books. One on pivoting, these transitions. And one on like the ground truth of what's going on at the Southwest border. Like, I want to go and interview people and talk to people.
Well, and that's where you get the truth. And especially, I think, and you can speak to this because I look at it from an outside view of being political my whole life, or, following politics. Been in DC. I lived in Richmond, so I've been south of DC, but, and I went up to DC a lot on the weekends. So I've been around, I've been in the White House 3 times. I've done
Uh-oh.
most of the touristy things. And, but the fact of the matter is, if all your life is in DC and you're trying to pass a bill or talk about legislation that deals with how to fix the border crisis, any of these guys, and I know many of them have, because I've seen videos of them that go down to the border, and that's what you should be doing. And as a taxpayer, I'm okay to pay the airfare and the security detail to send the congressmen and senators down. Let them go spend a week on the border, embed them with a border agent. Because
and you know what? Embed them with a border agent at 3 o'clock in the morning in the middle of the desert.
Yeah. Just you and a border agent and two guns. And not knowing who the hell is out there and what they're going to do to you.
Not like a big security detail and camera crew.
Yeah, 100%.
Not at 3 p.m. in the afternoon with on the border next to the fence with 1,000 people around you.
Right, exactly. And I think if the congressmen and senators were put in that situation, and I want them to be safe. I don't want there to be a safety issue for them. But to actually know what, you know, you can safely put people in an environment and know what they're going to experience.
You know, just had me thinking, I should just do a crowdfund, take a 2 week trip down there and interview everybody I possibly can. Like people on a border, migrants, everybody. I think maybe I'll try something different. You know what I mean? Let's game plan this thing. Let's do it.
We can talk offline.
Yeah.
We can talk offline. I think that's the way, as you know, you put boots on the ground, you learn something. So, you know, I was fortunate enough in 2022 to go out with John and with Shinedown for a bunch of shows.
And I love that show.
It was for book research.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, the chapters I've written that kind of, not about what I saw, but just taking those experiences and be able to put a character into a backstage or into a crowd of what's going on. I can go to those memories because I was fortunate where with the pass I had, I could go anywhere during the show.
When you get into that writing realm, and that's one thing I started doing when I started a lot of this traveling lately, is getting into like, what would my character do? And, you know, I love that. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I want to talk to real people. Listen, my relevant border experience has been years. I like to talk to people that are still on the border.
They're still there, yeah.
Still working it. I can't make conscious decisions about bringing facts to people unless I'm talking to people that are actually doing it.
Right, exactly. And you've had people that have spent their entire career at those hot spots. And
that's what's great about having this network of people that I do.
Yeah.
Is keeping it relevant.
Since we're talking border and we're talking writing, but I'll ask this though, because I don't want this to be just a single topic type of a thing. What do we do? How do we fix? There's so much debate about it, but from a common sense standpoint, is there some things, you know, someone will say, hey, we just have to finish the border wall. The border wall has to be done. It's like, well, but border walls.
It's like a three-phase thing, three different areas, I should say.
Okay.
You have to change the politics down south of the border to where it's not an easy. Right now, there's a huge PR campaign that says, get up here into the U.S. Nobody's going to stop you. And as soon as you get off to that border, carte blanche, do whatever you want. And then you might have a path to citizenship. Without changing that message, the flow at the border is not going to change. You could put up the biggest wall in the world. It's just going to funnel traffic into areas that are open. And I do believe in certain areas, you need walls. Like, because here's the deal. It's like there's thousands and thousands of migrants that have died and perished to exposure. Now, but if you have walls and technology to funnel them into certain areas that are monitored.
Right.
It's in the Southwest border. It's like if you're driving from Maine to Miami on Route 95, it's that long. That is the border. You can't fence the whole thing. It's not realistic.
Right.
But you can put certain areas in and you can funnel people into certain places that you can monitor with technology and with boots on the ground. The third option is this. Well, there's third actually has a couple of different phases of it. Is immigration law is so complex and so just, it's so convoluted that you need to take it and piecemeal it and you need to fix the certain points. Certain people can come in on visas, certain people can do this, certain this and that, but you have to piecemeal it. You can't have this big, huge, we're going to fix it all. You have to take it piece by piece.
Gotcha.
And it has to have bipartisan approval, because right now you're not going to get anything passed. So no new laws or anything else are going to change, but maybe there's certain parts of that immigration law that you could agree on. Mm-hmm. The other thing is we have immigration judges. Immigration judges are part of Department of Justice. Who runs the border? Department of Homeland Security. The Executive Office of Immigration Review is EOIR, is Department of Justice. All your immigration judges fall under a completely different bureaucracy than Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. All the attorneys and prosecutors, quote unquote prosecutors and everything, are coming from DHS. The problem with all of this is right now is you have millions and millions of backlog cases. So people who are coming across the border now and claim some sort of immigration benefit, mm-hmm. or want to review asylum or anything, aren't going to see an immigration judge for at least 24 months. So they're already here 22 years. But when they first go see that judge, they're going to get extended to another 2 years or whatever. So it's going to be years before they see a judge.
Years, yeah.
We only have about 600 judges right now. 600 judges to deal with millions and millions of cases.
Yeah.
Even if they're virtual, you still, to bring a case when you're looking at it, it's just not realistic. You need to change the laws to have, you know, multiple thousands of immigration judges. And it sucks, but you have to. But what comes with that is you're going to have multiple thousand more DHS attorneys and staff and this and that. And there's no quick fix to it. But the thing is, if you just ignore it, it's just going to keep getting bigger. I mean, this is going to be the biggest record year of biggest migration pattern ever.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be millions and millions in 1 year. And it's just right. Like, holy crap.
Well, I just saw something. It was a podcast. I won't say what podcast, but I saw a legitimate podcast, a very, very well-known podcast, that they were talking about this very topic. And they were saying New York City is, of course, housing a lot of migrants that have been sent up there from Texas or from wherever. And they're putting them in hotels and they're feeding them 3 meals a day. And even mm-hmm. the mayor of New York has come out and said, this is unsustainable. I mean, you have a homeless population there that gets nothing like that. They don't get a hotel room. They don't get that. But people coming across the border are. And then that starts conflict amongst people of saying, well, why do the homeless people get, why are they getting mm-hmm. shafted? And the people coming across the border, which is illegal, there are laws to say you can't just come across our border and get anything you want, but we are letting them come across the border and putting them up. And, you know, it just causes so much social issues then.
It's so funny. Like, you bring up the word illegal, and I stopped using the word alien a while ago. But the thing is, I'm narrating my book Unwavering into a podcast, mm-hmm. and I've been doing, I'm up to chapter 18 now, and I'm releasing that. But I used to use the word alien so much, and it's like, it's so politically deemed, like, it's just very political word. And it's like, you try to speak to as many people as you can, but you have to watch everything you say now.
Right.
And it's tough to watch everything you say. And do I all the time? Nah, not so much. I'm still pretty outspoken, but it's just in my own little world.
Well, and there's also, like, from my standpoint, I have a sympathy level of these are human beings coming across the border. If they had a great situation where they were, they would stay there. So obviously the situation where they are is bad enough that they're willing to risk life and limb and their children get across to be in a country where you literally can have anything happen in your life. It's not going to be easy. It doesn't happen for every person that comes, but this is the land of opportunity. And at some point, though, if the system collapses, if we push the system to its brink, if we borrow ourselves into oblivion, if we take in anybody and their brother and then give them the kitchen sink, the system collapses. And then this is no longer the place of opportunity.
Oh, I agree.
So, yeah, it's definitely something that needs to be fixed. So, I know time-wise, we want to be careful of your time. So, so where did your inspiration come for, like, the next book? Is that just because of the desire to share things you've learned or your passions? But what's the inspiration?
That's exactly what it is. That's my inspiration, is just to speak to the truth that I know and to get more knowledge. My next books are going to be with talking to people.
Yeah.
Their experiences. So it's not just my own experience, but I want to learn from them.
That's awesome. The one other thing that, just as you say that, and I think about it, maybe an idea, and we can troubleshoot, or we could talk offline about this, but I throw this out there, is maybe recording some of those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then using it for, like, even some podcasts to, like, bring light to those those people. And some people, obviously, if they're border agents, you probably would have to not use their actual name. Or
oh yeah, you could do pseudonyms all day long.
But yeah, but I think people would appreciate that versus, hey, I talked to such and such, and this is what they told me. It's mm-hmm. a little different when you bring someone on and say, hey, this is John, and yeah. John works on the border, and this mm-hmm. is John's story about what he sees every day. But I think ultimately, until people see it for their own eyes, and you know, if I couldn't imagine living in a border town. I couldn't imagine dealing with that on a regular basis.
And you know, you and I, because we live such inside the country, it's like you really have to start talking to people that are there.
Yeah. 100%. So the other thing that I want to talk about is with the let's mention unwavering. So how was that process for you to, and was it cathartic to tell about your experiences?
Yeah, very. And my process for that was a little bit different. What I did was I mapped it. I did a mind map. I put myself in the middle, and then I looked at all the different aspects of my life, and I said, okay, what am I, because the book's about pretty much my memoir. So then I write, okay, like tonight I'm going to write about my time at a border. Tonight I'm going to talk about like when I joined the army. Tonight I'm going to talk about drug overdoses. Tonight I'm going to be trafficking. And that's how I kind of did it.
And you're going to do a couple more fiction. The other question I had for you too is, with the amount of years you've worked for the government, obviously in the military before that, is there any advice that's come out of that for people that want to look for a government job? And then also, is there things that you learned in that process that you would, you know, want to, maybe this becomes a book as well of, you know, kind of not steer people away from it, of course, but kind of give them a heads up on what they might face depending on what direction they go.
Just know what you're getting yourself into. You know, that's all I got to say. Become as well informed as you can.
That's always good
advice. You want to learn it. You want to go into a different agency, then you're going to have to like do your due diligence. It's a job. It's a job. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a career.
That's true. And with some of those agencies too, you can switch to different agencies.
Yeah, I switched tons in my retirement transfer. So
yeah, switch that kind of makes it neat. Well, hey, I want to end you with this. This is what I'm asking everyone. The form might change a little bit, but for me myself, I'm convinced that our life is really a book. We have first page, we have a last page. Nobody knows how many pages they're going to have between those two pages. But you're a writer. And you're a very creative man. You have the choice to write your last page. You can write. So it's kind of a heavy question, depending on how you look at it. But so what does Jason Piccolo's last page look like? If you can write that last page in your book, what is it?
Oh, it's like The Godfather. You know how he's sitting there watching his grandkids, and he's old as hell, and he just keels over. He's in a chair in the garden watching the grandkids running around, or great grandkids, and he's like, oh, I'm good. Boom.
They just say, I think Grandpa Jason just fell asleep. They're like, okay, mm-hmm. It's a good way to fall asleep.
Uh-huh.
I like it. Well, thank you for coming on. Thank you for, thank you for what you do for law enforcement. I know we talked the other day and you were bringing some supplies out to local law.
Yeah, I have a nonprofit I started. That's one thing I did when I retired, was called the Protectors Foundation.
Absolutely.
And it's geared towards small departments who have no funding for training.
Mm-hmm.
Or like tactical equipment, and not even tactical equipment, like tourniquets. Skin tourniquets out there.
Yeah. Well, you're giving back, and that's I think that's a lesson for most people to learn, that if more people gave back, if we could get everybody to just give back in some form or another, we don't need the government as much. We don't need these other things. When communities come together, it's a pretty powerful thing. So I applaud you for. In your retirement, in your golden years, Dr. Piccolo, I applaud you for giving back and doing what you're doing. For people that don't know you for some reason and watching this podcast, where can people find out more information about the Protectors and Jason Piccolo?
Instagram is my favorite, at Dr. Jason Piccolo. And then if you go to my website, jasonpiccolo.us, jasonpiccolo.us. And then the Protectors Foundation is my nonprofit.
Awesome. Well, folks, check that out and support Jason. He does have books out, so you can go to Amazon, and hopefully we'll see a few more books out. And it's possible Jason and I might be working on something as well, but we can't
Yes,
talk
we
about
are.
that.
Not
We might talk
yet.
about that down the line. So thank you for coming on, Jason. I appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
Looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C, as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.